Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Yud Aleph from an Aleph by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, a Gioret, Vashvuya, Vashivcha. So here you have three women who might have issues or questionable past. The Gioret, the Shvuya, and Shivcha, because of different considerations for each one of them about their past and why we might believe that they are not a Betula. Shinifdu, Vishinidgairu, Vishinishtachiru, that were either redeemed, that were converted, or were freed. You note here that there is an inconsistency in the Mishnah between the first three and the verbs that are used here. A gioret is nitgayeret, a shvuya is nishtachara, and a shivcha would be shenifdeit. Had it been out of order and backwards, it would have been fine. And if he had done nifdu, then nishtachru and nitgayru would have been fine, because the Mishnah does that sometimes, where it lists something and then reverses the list when it lists it second. But that's not what happens here. For those that indicate the reason that the verbs are in this order is because it has to do with the likelihood or the permissibility of doing this. Shinifdu, we know Pidyon Shvuyim is one of the top mitzvot. It trumps almost any other mitzvah. So Shinifdu is mentioned first. In terms of Nishtacharu, that is something that the Gemara says is an Isur Lav. It's an Isur to free an Eved Knani or Shifcha Knanit, Isur Lav Mina Torah. And then, Shinit Gairu sits somewhere between those two concepts, and maybe that is the order of the verbiage here in the Mishnah, because it doesn't match the subjects that are in the beginning of the Mishnah. Chutot mibnot shloshanim v'yom echad. Any of these that transpired when they were below the age of three, ktubatan matayim. By default, their ktubah, when they get married, will be 200 zuz. V'yesh lahan tanat bitulim. And whoever marries them has a right to make a claim of bitulin, because the assumption is that they are a bitula. So if they show up to the marriage and we find out they're not bitulin, then he has a claim to come to Beit Din and say, what's going on over here? So the default of these women, again, is that they are bitulot. The main reason being that they are younger than 3 years. And as younger than 3 years, because I'll be, first of all, they're not ru'in the bi'ya at time. Number two is that even if they were ruin the biyah, because I believe that under the age of three, that whatever happened at that point in time, we'll see that in the Gemara, has no lasting impact or physical impact on the girls. So Amar Rav Huna, ger katan matbilin oto al dat beit din. A ger katan, so here's a minor who's coming to convert. We put him into the mikveh al dat beit din. Rashi over here says something. It's not so simple what Rashi says. Rashi is trying to deal with the issue. Why is Beit Din involved here at all? Why is this Aldat Beit Din? So Rashi says over here, if you look at the first Rashi, Ein lo av, v'imo hevi atoli itgayer. He does not have his father, and his mother is bringing him to convert. And then Rashi says afterwards, Aldat Beit Din shlosha yu b'tvilato, kadin kol tvilat ger. There should be three people present at the tvilah, like all other tvilot gerin, which is also machloket rishonim. Tosafot believes you do not need three by the Tevilah. You only need it by the Kabbalah to Omitzvot. By Tevilah, you may not need a Beit Din to be there. The Ramban and others believe you do need a Beit Din by the Tevilah as well. To Trichim Gimel, that you need three there. Vehein Nasin Lo Av. And they become like his father. So this is interesting that Rashi says that Avat Beit Din is that basically the Beit Din replaces the father of the Katan. Now, most of the Rishonim question Rashi over here, question him from the perspective of, why does it make a difference if it's his mother or his father over here? If someone's bringing him to Beit Din, he's a minor, he can't make his own decisions, so he has a parent, a guardian that is coming with him. Whether it's the mother or the father, it should be relevant. If he's converting along with his mother or converting along with his father, then we'll see later on in the Gemara what the implications of that are. Just because it's his mother versus his father, it's hard to believe that there's something different. So most of the Rishonim indicate here that the mother is not converting along with the child, and it actually makes no difference who brings them to the court, the father, the mother, but they're presenting this child to convert, or this child has decided to convert, and his parents are there, they're not objecting to it, he's doing it on his own volition. So that's why there is a conversion going on here without the parents, or without the parents necessarily being involved in the process. Again, it's not so simple, because why is this child making the decision, and why are the parents there, and why are they not converting? There's a lot of factors that are uncertain here. The Gemara is assuming that there is conversion without parents involved. There's a child on their own. So now, Michael Mashmalon, What is Ravuna teaching us? The zchutu lo. Ravuna is coming to teach us that it's meritorious, it's in his favor that this happens. V'zochin l'adam shelo b'fanav. And therefore we can act as agents of this individual, even though he himself is unaware of what is happening. The principal does not know about the agency, and you're acting on their behalf in order to exercise some right on their behalf. So you see an aveda, you see something on the ground, or a matana is being given to them, and you acquire it on their behalf. So since it's a merit for them, you're acting, even though they never appointed you to act, you're acting on their behalf to their benefit. So the same thing over here, Beitin, who is acting as the guardian of the child over here, of that Beitin, is allowing for the conversion. As Rashi says, they are the Av over here, the equivalent of a father. And they're doing this on behalf or in benefit of the child. So even though the child themselves seemingly cannot make this decision or is unable to do this on their own, nevertheless, as their acting guardian, Beit Din does this. And why do we allow it to go through? Because chutulo, it's a benefit to him. It's positive for him to convert, which is, we'll see in a second, it's not so simple. And even when a person is not present, they can be zochen his behalf. Tanina, we have a Mishnah. So why do you need to tell me this? Why do you need to tell me about zochen shadam shelo b'fanav? That's an explicit Mishnah. I don't need an Amora to tell me that. Mishnah says, zochen l'adam shelo b'fanav. You can't be zoche. You can't take something that is to the benefit of an individual when they're not present. And you're not allowed to do something to the detriment of an individual when they're not there. So Ma'udetema. So Gemara says, what would I have thought over here? Why is this case different than a normal case? Oved kochavim befkera nechale. The Oved kochavim likes a life without boundaries. Likes a life without rules of the Torah. You could think of it as being now a chovah to their detriment to convert. Because now they're going to be bound by the Torah, they're going to be bound by the mitzvot, they're going to be within a framework which they're not necessarily going to like or happy about. The eved vaday behefkera nechalet. When it comes to an eved, we know that he would like the life of hefker much more than he likes the life of boundaries, mitzvot, Torah and mitzvot. That we know for sure. And the same thing is true by a oved kochavim. Rashi quotes us the Gemara in Gittin, which the Gemara is referencing over here, by an eved, is that an Eved likes the life of being an Eved because over there can consort with the Shvachot Kenaniyot, and rather than be a free man, he would much rather be in that situation where he can consort with the Shvachot Kenaniyot. Delo zila velo shchicha le'efkera. Once he becomes a real Ben Yisrael, he won't have those opportunities. And therefore he feels much more comfortable being an Eved than being free. So we're going to say, achat kama v'kama, for an Oved Kochavim who's already free and is not bound by the rules of the Torah, bound by the mitzvot, the framework of Yadut, he most certainly, it would be to his detriment in order to convert. Kamash Malan, that we don't say that because Dahani Mile Gadol, that's true with an individual who's already come of age. The Tam Di Isura, because he already experienced the life without boundaries. He experienced the Isur, he's lived a life that involve things that now are going to become restricted to him, but not just experience, meaning that he's been full-fledged involved in these things. Now he's not only going to have rules, but the rules are actually going to undermine his current lifestyle and that which he's partaking in. And that is a chovah to him. But, on the other hand, of a katan zechut ulo, from talking about a katan, it would be a zechut for him because he never experienced the isur. So since he never experienced the isur, for him, living a life that is built around structure, boundaries, and mitzvot, to him, he would see that as more positive than negative. Because he's yet to experience the other aspects of it. Since he's yet to experience them, that is considered to be a zchut. So Gemara differentiates over here between someone who's already experienced or been outside the framework of the Torah and enjoyed that life, to come and then place restrictions on it, to not be able to eat this, to not be able to engage in this, to not be able to do this. All of those items are not going to be viewed positively. They're going to be viewed as detrimental. And therefore, you can't be zuche in that sense on behalf of those individuals. By Katan, who hasn't had all of those experiences, for him, you could still call it a zechut ulo in order to be mit gayer. Major questions among the Rishonim over here is, how does this work? This zachin adam shelo b'fanav. Why the mechanism is important over here is because it may not work over here. And that's why it's so important. You see a very large Tosafot over here. Rashi already says it. You can see Rashi when he talked about Ma'udetem Ovi Kochavim Bafkera Nechalei V'chovu Lo V'en Adam Naseh Shliach. la'adam l'chobato. Person cannot be made into a shliach, cannot be made into an agent for someone else to their detriment. And Tosafot right away says, b'teima, tazchia, havimitam shlichut. The ability to be zoche for another party works because of the mechanism called shlichut. The kevin zochutulo, anan sahadei da'avid le'shliach. We are, in a sense, there's empirical evidence that he would want to appoint this individual as his agent. So even though the principal does not directly appoint the agent to be his agent, the shliach over here, nevertheless, we know that in any circumstance, any person, sane person, would make you into an agent. Therefore, you can become an agent. That's what Tosfot says. That's how Zechiah works. Now, Tosfot's in a serious bind right now because he has two problems. Number one, we're talking about a katan. A katan cannot create shlichut because he's not a bardat to create shlichut. So how does this work over here? Number two, on top of that, he's an Oved Kochavim. He's not only just a katan, he's also an Oved Kochavim. So how do you generate shlichut over here? The Tosfot is really, really stuck because of his view inside of Zechiah. And he really doesn't know the mechanism that is working over here. He says shlichut, agency, doesn't work for two reasons over here. So then he says, v'nir l'ri, t'hochanami zakin lo midrabanon. Tosfot over here says this whole mechanism is working midrabanon over here because he cannot figure out how to get the shlichut through the case that's in front of us in the Gemara. So he says, inami, given the bach zechia nase Yisrael, have like Yisrael gamur linyan zechia. So there you have this concept, how we can get rid of the Oved Kochavim. It's a similar concept that we have in the Gemara and Kiddushin and Gitin, which is gito vecheruto baim biyachad. That sometimes you can make an acquisition that happens simultaneously. Two things happen simultaneously. So he claims that we can overcome the problem of nachri by the fact that the moment that he converts, the shlichut and the conversion happen at the same time that he's really Israel. But he's still then stuck with the side of katan. How does the katan create shlichut? And he's still stuck in the level derabanan. And he asks on himself the obvious question. He says, "Vim tomar eichavi ger mi derabanan v'sharinan le'bebat Israel." We're going to consider him to be converted, a full-fledged Jew, and now he's going to marry a Jewish woman. And we're going to approve of that marriage. How do you do that? That's Oker Davar Mina Torah. So Tosfot says, like he said in Yevamot, and Daf Peitet with Eid Echad, Tosfot said the same thing over there. Ve'esh lomar, the kasavar, the mandamar, b'isha rabba, de'esh koach, v'yad chachamim, l'akor Davar Mina Torah, b'kum v'aseh. The chachamim are empowered not only to override the Torah, b'shevi al taseh, which most people agree with, and the Gemara says that explicitly, but Tosfot's belief is that you can do it b'kum v'aseh, if there's a good reason for it, and it doesn't go directly head-on with the Torah. The Chachamim are empowered, bikum va'aseh, to override the Torah. And Tosafot says the same thing by Eid Echad. That by Eid Echad, we also have this concept that Eid Echad is Neman. By the case of Ishto, how does it work? Tosafot invokes the same principle, which is, Chachamim were empowered to be Oker, Davar, Mina Torah, bikum va'aseh. So that's how Tosafot gets out of this problem. He says it's Midrabanan, and it's the Midrabanan in a sense that they're overriding the Torah. So that's pretty radical shita, but he's stuck over here because of his issue with regards to how he viewed Zechiah. On the other hand, there are the Rishonim, like the Ramban, the Rashba, others in the Gemara and Gitin, that say that Zechiah is Mishum Yad, but not Mishum Shlichut. It doesn't work because of agency. It works as if you are the extension of the individual themselves. So then, once you're working that way, you don't really need what we call Anan Sadeh. You don't need Bardat anymore, because you just become the longer arm or reach of the individual. So in that case, you don't need an appointment of shlichut. You don't need a bardat. Doesn't matter, goy, Israel. All those factors will fall away in that case, because yad just means my arm got longer. My arm got longer, you're just basically my arm being longer. So here, maybe you're able to act on behalf of the katan because of this concept that tzchia is mishum yad. That would also match the Ramban's shita, interestingly enough, by Eid Echad. The Ramban rejects Tosafot's explanation by Eid Echad about that it's koach v'yad chachamim l'kor davar min haTorah b'kum v'aseh. He says Eid Echad is midoraita, that the Eid Echad here works min haTorah. How exactly, or some of the factors that are involved might be the Rabbanan or guided by the Rabbanan, but the underlying principle that Eid Echad works over here is a doraita principle, and therefore the chachamim don't have that power to be oker b'kum v'aseh, according to the Ramban in that instance. And so the shita would actually match up for that reason. That's the way that the Ramban learns it. There are others, Sota Choshen, speaks about this. And over there he says that maybe they're both right in some senses, which is Sechiyas Mishum Shlichut, which would be like the Bali Tosavot. But how it's generated is different than what Tosavot says. Tosavot over here says very specifically Anan Zadeh. We look or we understand that that's what the nature of what people would want or they would be. And therefore we assume the principal would have appointed this agent over here. And the agent is functioning as if the principal gave him permission. But the Tzadok Choshen says we can say that it's a Gzerat HaKatuv. It's not Anan Zadeh, but rather Gzerat HaKatuv. And then he avoids a lot of the issues that Tosafot comes. The Torah empowered the agent. It's not that the principal is empowering the agent, like Tosafot says, but rather the Torah empowered the agent. We know that the Torah says that when it comes to a zchut, you can act. You can act as an agent without a principalship. And that's how it works here. You're an agent, independent agent in that sense, independently appointed by the Torah, Gzeret HaKaduv, that allows you to function and allows you to work over here. And because of that, it works. Now, then you can get over problems like Katan, you can get over problems like Nachri, because you don't need to be appointed in this case. Now, Nachri might be a little harder, because if it's Gzerat HaKatuv, what's the Shaykhut of the Nachri to Gzerat HaKatuv? So there you can maybe argue like Tosafot, that Ba'im Ke'achad, and therefore it works. But on the other hand, you don't need the principal to be a person who can function in creating the agency, because he's not involved. The Torah did that. The Torah stepped in and did it on his behalf. So there's a Ksota Choshen that also speaks about there. So these are different views, but very important in terms of how Sechiyah works because of exactly this issue, which Tosafot raised over here, that it won't work in every location. You have to look at the factors in each location to understand if it's going to work or not. And that's what Tosafot is dealing with over here because of that issue. So now the Gemara continues and says, Lema Mizhaye Le, let us say that our Mishnah supports this statement. Hagiorit, Vashvuya, Vashivcha Shinibdu, Shinitkairu, Shinishtacharu, Bechutot Nibdot Shloshim, Vayom Echad, my love, that Vlinu al Dat Beitin. How did they become Geirim over here? Beitin acted as their guardian, and they converted based on that. Because here we're talking about Shinitkairu. They converted at less than 3 years old. Well, who converted them at less than 3 years old? Must have been Beitin doing this on behalf of these individuals. Well, what's the case in our Mishnah? It's a case where a ger came to convert, and his children came along with him. Meaning that a family converts. So here the parents convert. The parents are clearly able and capable to make a decision in terms of conversion. The children are not. They're still youngsters. They're still minors. They don't have that ability. But they are coming along with their parents because the nechalu b'mayad David avon. In general, children will follow their parents. And therefore, whatever activity their parents engage in will also function here to benefit the children. And the children will convert along with the parents. Again, the Rishonim try to deal with why does the mother and the father make, it should make no difference. As long as they're a person of age that's converting, then we should assume that the Katan is going because of the person of age, not because of their own volition. So in the end, you're going to have to come, whether it's Rashi's explanation or not, seemingly you have to come to explanation that the Katan is going on their own and the parent is not involved. Otherwise, it's hard to explain why a mother or a father should be different in this situation. Rashi obviously felt it was that way, but it's still hard to understand why. So now over here, they are going to follow their parent because that's what children do. But then you have the qualification of Rav Yosef, which is Rav Yosef, Higdilu Yocholim Limchot. Once they come of age, they can reject the action taken on their behalf by their parents. So even though, in a sense, it was Ezechutulo, nevertheless, they have this ability to walk away from it. Now the Gemara says, Eifei Abaye Hagiorit, Vashvuyav, Shvifcha, Shenifdu, Sheshenitgairu, Vishtacharu, Pichotot, Mimrot, Shoshim, Vyom Echad, Ketubatan, Matayin. The Ketubah is 200 Zuz. Visa, Kadakta, Igdilu, Yacholim, Limchot. So if you think that when they come of age, they can basically walk away from this, Yavin and Lake Tubah, Dazlav, Achla, Bgiuta, you're going to give her a ketubah so that she can go run off and use it while she is not a Jew. Meaning that the institution of ketubah is, as we've seen now, whether it's the Rabbanan or whether it's Doraita or Ikrami Doraita, is put in place to generate a marriage of Kedusha, to ensure the security of the woman, and to maintain a marriage that we want where the two parties are going to bring up children that are part of the faith. Over here, this woman, in a sense, can grow up and decide, hasta la vista, I'm out of here. Well, why would we grant her ketubah? Why would we grant her money in those cases where she can just walk with the money, basically? Would the Chachamim institute a ketubah according to those that say it's the Rabbanan, even those who say Doraita, the Torah is going to grant such a woman rights in this case, where it says, L'chi gadlah, when she grows up. We're not going to give her the ketubah when she's a ketana, because yes, you're at risk. But once she becomes of age, she's entitled to that ketubah, because she became of age. When it says, L'chi gadlah, nami, imachya, she could, when she comes of age, reject this, v'nafka, and then leave. So what does it help us that we're giving the ketubah when she comes of age? She can reject it. This is the qualification or the narrowing of this concept, which is, kevin shigdila sha'achat velo michata, shuvena yochol limchot. There's a pivot point. When she becomes of age, she has a decision. She can reject the life or the lifestyle that her parents had picked for her and walk away from it. But if for any time there, she says nothing and she's silent. Silence is acquiescence over here. And it's as if she gave a stamp of approval to what her parents did. And therefore,
there's no going back.
There's no going back anymore. Rashi notes the difference that in a case where at that moment she rejects it, she can walk away. We won't convince her otherwise. We will not consider it to be an Israeli mumaret. We will just consider it to be a non-Jew. And she can walk away. If after this point she accepted it and then tries to walk away from the faith, at that point, we'll consider it to be Yisrael Mumeret, and that'll come with all the ramifications that come along with that. It's a pivotal point in her life, and she has to make the decision. I don't know about that. That's also another, not so clear, whether you have to pose the question or not. She has to actively engage. I know of a case where a young girl was adopted, it was converted, and then when she came of 18 years old, which today is considered to be of age, she really came down hard on her parents, and said, who said that I wanted this? Meaning that, when I was 12, you asked me, and of course I said, yes, I can't. I don't have the capacity to make a decision, because that's when I come of age. She's felt that she didn't have the capacity to do it, and how come now she couldn't make the decision? It was unfair that she had to make the decision back then. It might be true that today, and I'm not saying that it changes the halacha, but it might be today that we keep kids in a state of immaturity for a much longer time and not taking on responsibility. Again, times have changed because of that, that when they come of age, they really are not responsible enough to make a decision, that the decision point should be somewhere else. But doesn't have halachic ramifications necessarily, but I'm just saying that there is some truth to what this girl said. Now, in terms of how it works, so the mechanism, again, you have to ask here, once they grow up and they make the decision, what happens? When they don't say anything or they don't reject it, does that mean that their conversion now, their conversion starts now? I mean, that's basically their conversion. Their conversion was awaiting the chalut shem conversion until they completed it. Or, do we say that the conversion was already done, and this just gives approval to Mafreya retroactively, and now approves of what was done before? So obviously that would have nafka minot as to when the point of conversion is. Is the point of conversion when their parents come across? Or is the point of conversion now? But that is a question of how to view what this mechia. Is this mechia just an opt-out? And that means that otherwise the conversion was already effective. Or is this mechia with the opposite sign being silence and acquiescence, which means that she's making the conversion at this point in time? Right. So there might be, I saw some that say that, by katan shein lo dat, I mean, in a Torah concept, we have a threshold. 12 years old, 13 years old, those are the thresholds by where katan is considered to have dat or ain't dat. By nachri, we don't have those same thresholds. We don't have an age threshold, and therefore it might have to do with the dat katan, really. Literally, that you have to really understand what the dat of a katan is, and that threshold might not be automatic at 12 and 13. Because 12 and 13 are the Jewish view of when that crossover happens, but that doesn't mean that it necessarily imposes the same age limits or groupings on the non-Jews. And you might look at it like some of the Gemarot and Arachin that talk about when is the mitzvah chinuch start for children, because in certain times they have capacities to act. And those capacities to act allow them to then perform the mitzvot or be to have chinuch take place. I mean, you could easily differentiate between a 5-year-old and an 11-year-old. It's very easy to see that there would be different capacities. For a Jew, there's no difference. For a non-Jew, maybe you have to really understand whether the person has capacity to make decisions. All right, Meiti Bravo. Elu Narot, Sheish Lan Knas. These are the girls who are in the Arot that get Knas. Knas is if there was a rape that took place. The fine from the rape, they're entitled to. So a Baal Mamzeret. So here's an individual who rapes or is meanes a mamzeret. A mamzeret, even though she's not ra'ui levo bekal, and the punishment of a rapist is veloti elisha, that she will be a wife to him forever, but here, there's no ability to do that or have that marriage go through, because these women are asurot bekal. She's still entitled to the protection of the kenas. Valinitina, valakutit. Again, individuals who are not ru'iyim nevo bakal, nevertheless, they're entitled to knas. Bel giorit, bel shviya, bel shivcha, shenivdush, nitgayiru, v'shtacharu, p'chutot mibnot shlosh shanim v'yom echad. Same list that's found in our Mishnah. Those individuals, because they're still considered to be betulot, and since they're considered to be betulot, they are entitled to the knas that comes for someone who's me'anes and betula. Yesh lehen knas. All of them have knas. Again, here you're dealing with a giorit, which means that she converted when she was a minor. What type of conversion? Again, if you say over here that when they grow up, they have the ability to reject the conversion, again, they're going to grant her the knas. Here that she should be able to walk off with the knas and then go become a non-Jew. She's now benefiting from the Torah law. And now we're going to allow her to benefit from the Torah and then walk off and use it when she is no longer a Torah Jew. So the chid gadah, when she comes of age. So where it says, the chid gadah, nami machia. When she grows up, she can reject it. Venafka, and then leave. Kevin sheik dila shachat v'lo michata shuvini yochad limchot. So the same answer that we had by Abaye. So now we have to understand, Rav and Abaye challenged this rule of Rav Yosef from different occasions, one from our Mishnah, one from the Mishnah by Knas. And the question is, why didn't they use each other's proofs? Abaye lo amar ki Rav. Abaye did not choose Rav's answer because, Artam Knasa, and Hainu Taimo shalei niskar. Wait a minute. The reason that we want the Knas over here may have nothing to do with the woman receiving the Knas, but rather for the individual who has to pay the Knas. We need some sort of deterrent so he doesn't act this way. So he doesn't behave in this way. So if we don't make him pay the knas, the beneficiary is not the fact that we stop a woman from walking off with the knas and taking it off to be a non-Jew. The beneficiary is the guy who has to pay it, the one who would have been penalized otherwise. And we don't want to engender or condone certain behavior, so we would force the knas despite the fact that she might go off and convert back into bigeyuta. So that's why we don't worry about the knas over here, and that's why Abaye says, I wouldn't have brought my proof from that Mishnah that Rava brought. Rava lo amar ki Abaye. Why doesn't Rava like our Mishnah as the proof? Because tuba ainu taima shlo tei kala beinav lo tzia. Again, there's another factor involved by the tuba, which is that we're trying to protect the woman. We don't want him just dealing with women willy-nilly. And therefore, the tuba is a protection mechanism that we want in place. We want to establish a standard for marriages. We want to stay at a paradigm in marriages. We are trying to force him to act in a certain manner. Again, it's not all about the woman. And it's not all about the receipts of the money of the ketubah. We're trying to engender certain behavior amongst the men. And because of that, it's important here, irrespective of what monies go to the woman, it's important that the man doesn't just divorce the woman. It doesn't just throw her out of the house. In order to afford that protection, we have the ketubah. That's irrespective of the monies paid or the individual that walks off with the money. So it's interesting over here that according to the way that Rova is saying it, that by the case of Ketuba, we would actually afford protection to this woman. As Rashi calls it over here, the Ketuba is, Kozman shlo michata, gioriti, v'abdinim latakanto. As long as she remains a Jew, we're going to allow her this protection. So according to Rova, the reason he rejects Abaye is because we're willing to afford a protection to this woman, even though we know there's a possibility that she'll walk away. While she's a Jew, we will protect her. When she is not a Jew, then the protection lapses in that sense. Then we won't have that protection anymore. But she's entitled to her ketubah as long as she is under the auspices of a Jewish marriage. Now again, that might go back to what we said before, is how do you view this girl in the interim? If you think it's retroactive, then maybe she is considered a Jew during that period, and we would establish a takanta. If you think it's all prospective when she makes the decision, then maybe Abaye's position makes more sense. Because Abaye then is saying that we won't grant protection to this woman until she makes that decision point and comes in. Then we'll avoid all the takanot that she wants, but we can't do it until she makes that decision point. And therefore, by him, the proof is from our Mishnah over here. And the same question could be asked in reverse, which is, if they do reject the Geirut when they come of age, then what was their status until that point in time? Were they considered to be a ger gamur? The Rashba and the Ritvas both say that the individual is considered to be a ger until the point where they actually reject it. And the Meiri says that's prospectively, looking retroactively, all the shchita that they did, all the yayin that they touched, everything that they did, they were classified as Jews. It's only at the point of Mechiyah that we assume that they are no longer Jewish. On the other hand, the Chatam Sofer writes that that's not the case. that any wine that they touch during that period of time will be like Yayin Nesech and will be Choshesh for Stam Yenam. Meaning that the rejection is a retroactive rejection of the entire Gerut, as if they were never Jewish. Tosfot does ask an interesting question over here. The Gemara here says, L'chi Gadla, when she becomes of age. But he says over here, when it comes to Knas, she has to be a Gdola, because she will not connect to Knas unless she is a Nara. M'farishri, L'chi Gadla, V'nehaga Minhag Yehudit. Here, the read changes the definition of L'chi Gadla. We assumed, which is, L'chi Gadla was 12 when she turns from a minor into a woman of age, or same thing by a boy at the age of 13, that was the decision point. The read here changes that decision point and says that that won't work over here because they, by knas, you only connect to knas when you're of age. So if then she's of age, how can you say l'chi gadla? She already crossed over that point of l'chi gadla right at the moment that she is entitled to knas. If tana is not entitled to knas over here. Read says l'chi gadla v'naga minhag yehudit. And once she reaches, he doesn't give a defined age, but once she reaches the time period where she grows up and start to act like a Jew. So that could be after 12, or it could be before 12. It's not clear. The read does not give a definition. And then again, that might change. According to the read, it could be that you could change the threshold line depending on the times, depending on the culture, so on and so forth, because he's opening up this Pandora's box, that the threshold is not just coming of age. The threshold has to do when a person starts to act and conduct themselves with the Jewish lifestyle. Again, sometimes they could be younger, sometimes they could be older, depending on the culture and the nature of children. Now, this issue raised by the Ri is actually a major machloket Rishonim as to what has to happen at the time of acceptance. From the Ri, it sounds like she has to actively continue to act like a Jew, and that automatically creates the acceptance. On the other hand, the Tosafot Yishanim actually says just the opposite. If she acts like a non-Jew, then that is a rejection. But otherwise, it's not a rejection. Obviously, the question between them is, what is the default status of this girl? According to many of the Rishonim, you don't even have to ask the child whether they want to convert. We can deduce from their behavior what their intent is or what they plan on doing. And the Ritva says all she has to do is one Maaseh Yehudi after she comes of age, and then she automatically is accepted or has accepted on upon herself the Gerut. Or the Ritva suggests maybe she continues to act from the time that she's a Ktana all the way into the moment that she's a Gdola. And from that period of time, she has a Maaseh Yehudi that covers that period of time. Whether it's slightly before she turns into a bat mitzvah or slightly after she turns into a bat mitzvah, that will be what determines and makes her into a full-fledged ger. Now, this does have a derivative impact in terms of adopting non-Jewish children, which many of the poskim push against because we don't actively try to be megayer children. And here, all these cases really actually turn out to be bidyavad, because had they come to us beforehand, we wouldn't tell them not to adopt the child, because we're not necessarily going to tell you we should be megayer the child. Now, once they've adopted the child and now they're pressing the Beit Din to do a gerut, then the Beit Din is going to be forced to act on it and do a gerut. But most of the posukim try to advise to adopt a Jewish child rather than a non-Jewish child, both for the reason of the mitzvah bringing up a yatom v'yatomah, as well as the perspective of avoiding this halachic issue. Obviously, the issues are much more complex than what is simply be put out by the poskim, but it's also not so simple that a non-Jewish child that is adopted, that we can put the gerut in place, because basically, Beit Din is acting as their proxy to do this, and Beit Din would never usually engage actively unless somebody approached them, meaning the child themselves, to be mitgayer.
Okay, next Mishnah. Hagadol shebalak tana. Bikatan Shibalak Dola. So here you have individuals who engage in a marriage. We're going to see in the Gemara, it's going to become obvious in the Gemara, that the Gadol Shibalak Tana here is a Tana who's not Ru'ya the Bia, and a Katan Shibalak Dola is also a Katan Shlo Ra'uy the Bia. So that threshold for a boy is 9 years old, so he's having Bia before he's 9, and for a Tana, it's 3 years old is that threshold. So these individuals have engaged the other party at a time when their bia is not considered to be a bia. Umukadetz, and a woman who lost her betulim, but not because she engaged in any activity with a man. Tubatan mataim divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir believes that these women are all still entitled to tubat mataim. Basically, they're considered to be betulot. Chamim amrim mukadetz tubatam aneh. Chamim believe that by a mukadetz, a woman who loses her betulim, she's only entitled to a maneh, like an almana, or a beula. She's not entitled to a kuduva ve'betula. Betula, almana, grusha v'chalutza min ha'nisuin. This is as opposed to the previous Mishnah, which talked about the case where a woman is widowed, divorced, or has chalitza min ha'erusin. Over there, the Mishnah said the default was she is a betula, and classified as a betula. Over here, it's the other way around. Over here, if she's an almana, grusha v'chalutza min ha'nisuin. Now, this is even, as Rashi says, there was no time for her to consummate the marriage. Her husband died at the chuppah. Basically, the nisuin happened and her husband died, so it's clear that she didn't have biyah. Nevertheless, the burden of proof is on her. The assumption is that she's reached the point of nisuin, that she is a bi'ula, unless she proves otherwise. And someone who takes her as a wife cannot expect any more. Ktubatan maneh. The ktubah is a maneh. Vein lehen tanat bitulim. And nobody can make a case or a claim about the bitulim over here. Because the assumption is by nisuin, that once she's crossed over that threshold of nisuin, she is a bi'ula. Unless it was stated otherwise. Unless there were claims made otherwise, then the default status is that she's a bi'ula. And the husband has no claim. If she comes in and says, I am a bi'ula still, and nothing happened, then we have an issue, because then she is making a claim. It could be a mekach ta'ut then, yes. But the default we're talking about, the default is that she is a bi'ula, and that she's only entitled to a ketubah maneh. Hagiyoret, v'shvuya, v'shibcha, sh'nivdu, v'shnit gayiru, v'nishtacharu, yitzeirot obnot shloshanim v'yom echad. Again, this is the opposite case of the Mishnah before, where they were under the age of three. Here they're over the age of the three. For whatever the reasons are, we assume that there might be problems here of them engaging in bi'ah. Therefore, ketubatan maneh, v'en lehen tanat bitulim. Again, the default status of their ketubah and of their marriage is one of a bi'ula, because of the nature of the activities. Again, some of them against their will, possibly with the shvuya. Again, the case of giyoret and by shivcha, because we know that in terms of the Gemara, the view that the shvachot were engaged in znut, and that it was a free sort of life there. And the giyoret, because of her coming from a different culture. So all these individuals, we have suspicions about the fact that they are possibly bi'ulot. And because of that, that will be their default status. Again, unless there are statements otherwise, unless there are warranties provided otherwise. Now the Gemara says, Amar Yehuda Marav, Katan habala gdola asa mukateitz. So Rav Yehuda Marav says that a katan that engages with a gdola, katan here again is a boy less than the age of nine, where his bia ain't bia. So he does the same thing to a woman as mukateitz. That's what Rav Yehuda Marav says. Ki amrita kameda Shmuel, Rav Yehuda, who was a talmid both of Rav and Shmuel, says, when I went over and told over this memory of Rav to Shmuel, Amar ein mukateitz bebasar. You can't create a mukateitz through the basar or through the bia of a katan. It just doesn't happen. This doesn't create a mukateitz. Ike nematne lahala shmaita b'api nafsha. Some people say it independently, without the involvement of Rav Yehuda, but rather Rav and Shmuel making the statement straight out, which is katan abal gdola, Rav Amar asa mukateitz, Shmuel Amar ein mukateitz bebasar. That there is no such concept. So the question of this bi'ah, of the katan, how does that affect the woman? Rav says it affects the woman and makes it as if she is a mukateitz. Shmuel says it has no impact whatsoever. Meitiv Rav Hoshaya, gadol shebala ktana, ktana bala gdola, umukateitz. Our Mishnah defines three different categories. As a category of gadol shebala ktana, ktana bala gdola, and then mukateitz. Ktubatan matayim divrei Rabbi Meir, chachamim omrim mukateitz ktubatan maneh. So you see over here, the Chachamim only disagree with the case of Mukateitz. If you are right that a Katana Bala Gdola also makes her into Mukateitz, the Chachamim should have argued in that case as well. The fact that the Mishnah separates into three cases and the Chachamim only argue on that final case shows you that they are conceptually different, that they're not Mukateitz. Amarov Achikamar, Gadola Ba Ala Ktana Velo Klum. A Gadol that engages with a Ktana, again, a girl is less than 3 years old, Velo Klum. That has no impact whatsoever. This is the Chachamim's idea over here, that when you engage with a girl under the age of 3 years, then it's the equivalent of sticking your finger into your eye. When you stick a finger into your eye, it causes a redness to the eye, but the eye resolves itself after that point in time. It's not a permanent problem. On the other hand, a katana bala gdola, asa mukateitz. That a katan that engages with a gdola, a boy who's under the age of nine who engages with a gdola, makes her into mukadeitz. Umukadeitz gufa plukta de Rabbi Meir Rabbanan. And that case of mukadeitz, that is a machloket. So they join the last two cases in the Mishnah to make them one, and then you can explain it this way. Now we have a qualification of this. Amarami Barchama Machloket Bishihikir Ba. Machloket over here is only if they knew that. The Rabbi Meir Midami La Lebugeret, Verabanan Midami La Lebiula. This case of Mukatates is only a case where we know for certain she is a Mukatates. Because Rabbi Meir says when she's a Mukatates, she's no different than a Bugeret. The Rabbanan say that a Mukatates is the equivalent of Biula. Avalohi Kirba. If they had no idea that she was a Mukatates, Divrei Hakol Velo Klom. Everybody agrees, Velo Klom, that she gets nothing over here. Because she presented herself as a Bitula, and now she's found out to be a Biula. Rabbi Meir Amai Midami La Lebugeret. Why does Rabbi Meir say she's a Bugeret? Nidamyo Lebiula. Let him make her like the Chachamim, like a Biula. He says, Bula, Itavid Ba'amase. It's very Bidei Adam. It's very simple. When it comes to a Biula, it's very clear why she's called a Biula. Because there's a man-made problem over here. Literally. There's a man-made problem, right, which literally changed her status. Over here, these were natural causes that caused her to lose her bitulin, and then that's much more like a bulgaret. If you remember from the Gemara in Yevamot, the Gemara reviews over there with regards to a bulgaret, that she's no longer called a bitula for the Kohen Gadol, not because she lost her bitulin, but because for some reason the Chachamim believed that the dam bitulin of a bulgaret reduces or minimizes in some way, and therefore she's not a full bitula anymore. So just like a bulgaret, in a sense, loses her bitulim, not because of any bi'ah, but because of her natural aging, so too, the mukadates lost her bitulim, like a natural causes, and has nothing to do with bi'ah bi'de adam, and that's why Rabbi Meir says she, mukadates is like a bulgaret, not like a bi'ula. Rabbanan, adadamu'la le'bi'ula. Instead of comparing it to a bulan, and the damyo the bulgaret. Let her be compared to a bulgaret. Where it says, bulgaret, lo devavid masaklal. By bulgaret, nothing happened to her. Everything, it's absolutely natural. Hi, David Bamase. Over here, by the girl's mukateitz, yes, it's quote unquote natural causes, but it's natural causes that had impact. There was something that happened over here. It's just not just the aging that caused the change. There was some sort of physical blow or something that caused the change over here. About lohi kirba. But if they didn't know about it beforehand, divrei hakol v'lo klum. Right then, according to everybody, she's not entitled to anything now because it wasn't full disclosure. He thought he was getting a bitula. Instead, he ended up with a quote-unquote bitula, not really, but he ended up with a mukadetz. Meitir Rav Nachman, he omeret muket aitzani, v'u omer lo kielo trusat ishat. It's a Mishnah upcoming. A Mishnah that says they come to bait the next morning. He says, I didn't see dam bitulim. She says, you know why you didn't say dam bitulim? Because I'm a mukadetz. And he says, no, you know why I didn't say dam betulim? It's because you engaged in an activities with another man. So here you have the machloket about this case. So here it's clearly a shalo hikirba. Because if a hikirba, what's he coming to bait the next morning and make a claim that she's not a betula? He would have known that. Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Eliezer says she is believed in that case. So here's a case of lo hikirba. And they're saying that she's believed. So if that's the case, how could you say that lo hikir bava lo klum, that she gets nothing? How can it be she gets nothing over here? Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Gamliel are saying that she is believed. Well, if she's believed, then guess what? There's not v'lo klum over here anymore. Salam Rava, ben hikir ba, ben lo hikir ba, le Rabbi Meir Mataim, le Rabbanan, hikir ba mane, lo hikir ba v'lo klum. So Rabbi Rava changes the game here and says that for Rabbi Meir, she always gets 200. Doesn't matter whether known, not known. If she's a mukadet, she's entitled to 200. Then obviously the Mishnah, upcoming Mishnah, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Eliezer, is talking within the Shita of Rabbi Meir. In the Shita of Rabbi Meir, even b'shelo hikir ba, you're still entitled to ktuba, and therefore the machloket there is in the Shita of Rabbi Meir. On the other hand, the Rabbanan, hikir ba maneh, if she makes full disclosure up front, then she gets 100. Lo hikir ba v'lo klum. On the other hand, nothing. So now what Rava has basically done is said that up solving the problem or the question from the upcoming Mishnah by saying that's Rabbi Meir, as opposed to the Chachamim, Vahadar Bei Rava. And Rava retracted that position because, we'll see now, the Tanya. Ketzad, Hotzat Shemra. What is the case of Hotzat Shemra? It's a case where an individual shows up in Beit Din and says, basically, Lo Matzati Bitulim. I did not find this girl to be a Bitula. And he is incriminating her and saying that she had an extramarital affair when they were Be'erusin. Bala Beitin, Vamar Ploni lo matzak le bitcha betulim. This individual shows up in Beitin and says, I didn't find your daughter had betulim. If there are edim that she had an extramarital affair, she gets a ktubat maneh. So obviously the Gemara asks right away, what do you mean? You have edim over here that she had an extramarital affair, she ain't going to be around to collect her ktubah anymore. Yesh edim shezinta taktav, that's skilahi. That she's deserving of the death penalty. Why are you talking about a ktubah now? She doesn't get anything. She's going to be put to death in this case. Hachi kamar, im yesh edim shezinta taktav, if there are edim that there was an extramarital affair when she was arusa, biskila, then it's skila. Zintami ikara, if she had a premarital affair, then yesh la ktubah maneh. Then she gets a ktubah maneh. There we see, if he marries her, assuming she's a bitula, and sure enough, he finds out that she's not a bitula, she really is a biula, but not a biula in the sense that she cheated and was an extramarital affair, but because of whatever happened beforehand, yeshla ketuba maneh. She now has a ketuba maneh. So you see from over here that there is a resulting ketubat maneh according to whom? That's the question here. Whose position is this? That Shalohi Kirba, he didn't know about the information, finds out about the information afterwards, and now she's entitled to Ketubat Maneh. Whose position is this? The Chachamim, before you said, when Hikirba is Maneh, Lo Hikirba is Lo Klum. And then Rava said before that Rabbi Meir was Matayim Matayim. So whose position is this? They don't have anybody's position. The person marries a woman, doesn't find her Betulim. He will marry Mishi Erastani. Nanasti. After we got engaged, after we had erusin, I was raped. And it's his problem, it's his bad luck. He owned me in a sense, I was already his. And the reason that I got raped, I lost my bitulim, is because of him. Because I was under his quote-unquote auspices. That the whole incident happened before we got engaged, and it's on your reconnaissance, it's not my problem. And therefore, I got damaged goods and I was misled about this package. The late laklal, and she doesn't get anything. It's impossible Rav Amram and the whole door is sitting there when Rav Sheshet made this statement, which is Amram Rav Chir Bavin, Amram Rav Sheshet, Zoto Merit. He came to this conclusion. And then we have Rav Nachman come in with a question. So everybody's sitting around and they're just going to let there be a question. Kashlo, Vishani, and he must have answered. They must have said there, my mekach ta'ut nami. What does it mean, mekach ta'ut? Mi matayim. Avamane ida. Mekach ta'ut means that he loses 200 and it drops down to 100 and therefore it's no longer a question. Because then, in the case before, when we said that she's found from a bitula, found to be a bitula, it goes from 200 to 100. So to in this case, mekach ta'ut is not the classic mekach ta'ut, which means we unwind the whole thing and say there was no transaction. No. Just that we have to recalibrate the transaction over here and say she doesn't get 200, she gets 100. Vav atamar tlait laklau, and you're gonna say that nothing, you can get nothing? From a Rava, mandako motiv, shaper komotiv. Rava rejects it and says, whoever's asking the question is asking a good question. Mekach ta'ut gamrei mashma. The mekach ta'ut, when you use the term, and then we know, mekach ta'ut literally means what it means. Mekach ta'ut means that there was a mistaken premise in the transaction, and we unwind the transaction completely. So if that's the case, he disagrees with this solution, and therefore now this Mishnah is a problem. Velakasha. So what are you going to do with the question that we brought down here, that there's mekach ta'ut means zero, and Rav Sheshet before said that it means from 200 down to 100? Hach tariz ve'ima hachi. This, you have to explain this way. Im yesh edim shezinta tachta biskila. If there are edim that there was an extramarital affair while there was erusin, skila for the woman. Zintami ikara v'lo klum. If she had bia beforehand, meaning that it was prior to the erusin, then she gets nothing. V'lo ikir ba nimtzeit mukareitz yesh la ktubat maneh. It's not v'lo klum, not that they get nothing, but rather they get a ktubat maneh according to the chachamim, because it's only in the case where zintami ikara v'lo klum, so therefore a mukadeit would have a ktubat maneh. V'har Rava hu damar the rabbanan lo ikir bar v'lo klum. Didn't Rava say before, according to the rabbanan, it's either 100 or 0? First says Rabbi Meir thinks it's 200 both cases. El Shmami no, the Rabbi Rava ma'i. It's clear here that Rava backed out of his previous position, because otherwise how does he get the rabbanan saying 100 in a case she lo ikir ba? Because of that, we say now that Rava backed out of his position. That's what it means. I said in the Braita before, Nimtzeit, Mukareitz, V'lo ikir ba, yesh la ketubat maneh. It's not v'lo klom, not that they get nothing, but rather they get a ketubat maneh according to the Chachamim. And therefore we see Rava rejected his position before, and therefore he makes the Divrei HaKol. The Rabbi Lez and Rabbi Yeshua are arguing the Divrei HaKol, what's the entitlement here in that machloket between this woman and her husband as to why she is a bi'ula. And over there, Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Gamliel say, ne'amenet, then according to Rabbi Meir, she will get 200. According to the Chachamim, that she will get 100. Because whether hikirba or lo hikirba, their positions remain the same, which is that Rabbi Meir believes you get 200 in both of those cases, and Chachamim believe that she gets 100 in both of those cases. Okay, we're going to stop over here. Two lines from the bottom of Yud Aleph Amud Bet.